January 8th, the White House question, Mr. President, why did you share classified information with your ghostwriter? The president, I did not share classified information. I did not share it. I guarantee I did not. That's not true, is it, Mr. Hur?
That is inconsistent with the findings based on the evidence in my report.
Yes, it's a lie. It's just what regular people would say, right? Yeah, all right. So the next one. And all the stuff that was in my home was in filing cabinets that were either locked or able to be locked. That wasn't true either, was it?
That was inconsistent with the findings of our investigation.
Another lie, people might say, right? Because what you put in your report was among the places Mr. Biden's lawyers found classified documents in the garage was a damaged open box. So here's what I'm understanding, right? As Mr. Armstrong laid out, you find in your report that the elements of a federal criminal violation are met, but then you apply this senile cooperator theory that because Joe Biden cooperated and the elevator doesn't go to the top floor, you don't think you get a conviction. And I actually think you get to the right answer in that. I don't think Biden should have been charged. Don't think Trump should have been charged. But under like the senile cooperator theory, isn't it frustrating that Biden continues to go out and lie about the basic facts of the report that lay out a federal criminal violation?
Congressman, I need to disagree with at least one thing that you said, which is that I found that all of the elements were met. One of the elements of the relevant mishandling statute is the intent element. And what my report reflects is my judgment that based on the evidence, I would not be able to prove beyond a reasonable doubt to a jury that that intent element had been
right
met.
But the reason you have that doubt is the senile cooperator theory, the fact that Joe Biden is so inept in responding that you can't prove the intent, which, again, I don't quibble with that conclusion, but it's frustrating to be like, oh, well, this guy's not getting treated the same way as Trump because the elevator's not going to the top floor, so we can't prove intent, while at the same time Biden goes out there at the White House and says, well, you know, He just blatantly lies. And what I'm trying to figure out is whether or not Biden's lying because he's still so senile, he hasn't read your report, or whether it's a little craftier and a little more devious and perhaps a little more intentional than we might otherwise think. So I also want to go to this Biden Penn Center. Like, did it give concern to you that the Biden Penn Center, where all this classified stuff was being mishandled, was being floated by foreign governments?
Congressman, we were concerned with getting to the bottom of all of the classified documents that were recovered during the course of
our... Yeah, but what bothers me is that the money that was paying for the place where the documents were being inappropriately held, it was the Chinese and it was other foreign countries. Did that play into your analysis? Did you look into the $1 billion in foreign funding sources at the Biden Center at UPenn, for example?
Congressman, we conducted a thorough, impartial, and fair investigation, and we were very, very concerned with getting to the bottom of all the relevant questions relating to the recovered
documents. Sir, did you look into the fact that the Chinese were floating the place where this guy was keeping the documents unsecure? Yes or no?
Congressman, to the extent that we identified evidence that was relevant and significant to our investigation, we put it in our report.
Okay, well, it seemed relevant to me, maybe not to you. Another thing that seemed relevant to me is this ghostwriter, right? So the ghostwriter purposefully deletes this evidence that seems to be like show culpability of Biden's crimes, and you don't charge him. Why did you not charge the ghostwriter with obstructing justice and deleting evidence?
Well, for a number of reasons that are laid out in the report, but in brief, Congressman, yes, when we interviewed the ghostwriter, he did tell us, and I'm trying to get the exact language, that one of the things on his mind, one of the things he was aware of, was that I had been appointed special counsel and was conducting an investigation.
Right, so he didn't, just so everybody knows, the ghostwriter didn't delete the recordings just as a matter of happenstance. Ghostwriter has recordings of Biden making admissions of crimes. He then learns that you've been appointed. He then deletes the information that is the evidence, and you don't charge him.
That is reflected in the report, and one of the reasons...
Like, what does somebody have to do to get charged with obstruction of justice by you? If deleting the evidence of crimes doesn't count, what would meet the standard?
So, Congressman, as we state in the relevant chapter of the report, one of the things that Mr. Zwanitzer did not delete was transcripts of the recordings that he had created that included inculpatory evidence relating to Mr. Biden.
Oh, so if you destroy some evidence but not other evidence, that somehow absolves you of the evidence you destroy? Here's what I see. Zwaniger should have been charged, wasn't. Biden and Trump should have been treated equally. They weren't. And that is the double standard that I think a lot of Americans are concerned about.
231, you said this. President Biden had strong motivations. That's a key word. We're getting to motive now. President Biden had strong motivations to ignore the proper procedures for safeguarding the classified information in his notebooks. Why did he have strong motivations? Because, next word, because he decided months before leaving office to write a book. To write a book. That was his motive. He knew the rules. He broke them because he was writing a book. And you further say, and he began meeting with the ghostwriter while he was still vice president. There's the motive. Mr. Herr, how much did President Biden get paid for his book?
Off the top of my head, I'm not sure if that information appears in the report.
It sure does. There's a dollar amount in there. You remember?
It may be $8 million.
$8 million. Joe Biden had 8 million reasons to break the rules. Took classified information and shared it with the guy who was writing the book. That's why he did. He knew the rules, but he broke them for $8 million in a book advance. But you know what? It wasn't just the money. Joe Biden, here's this page 231, very next page. Joe Biden, in your report, Joe Biden viewed his notebooks as an irreplaceable, contemporaneous record of the most important moments of his vice presidency. He'd written this all down for the book, for the $8 million. And the next thing you say in your report is, quote, such a record would buttress his legacy as a world leader. You know what this is? It wasn't just the money. It wasn't just $8 million. It was also his ego. Pride and money is why he knowingly violated the rules. The oldest motives in the book, pride and money. You agree with that, Mr. Herr? You wrote it in your report.
That language, and it does appear in the report, and we did identify evidence supporting those assessments.
You also had another interesting statement in your report. You said Joe Biden, I want to make sure I get this right, viewed himself as a man of presidential timber. Remember that statement, Mr. Herr?
I believe that does appear in the report, at least in the executive summary.
I think this is interesting, because here's the scary part. Page 200. I said this earlier in my opening statement. Page 200. Joe Biden, this is a quote, Joe Biden risked serious damage to America's national security when he shared information with his ghostwriter. Shared it with his ghostwriter, the guy who was helping Joe Biden get $8 million. And oh, by the way, Mr. Herr, what did that ghostwriter do with the information Joe Biden shared with him on his laptop? What did he do after you were named special counsel?
Chairman, if you're referring to the audio recordings that Mr. Zwanitzer created of his conversations with
exactly what I'm referring to.
He slid, if I remember correctly, he slid those files into his recycle bin on his computer.
Tried to destroy the evidence, didn't he?
Correct.
The very guy who was helping Joe Biden get the $8 million, $8 million Joe Biden used, the motive for Joe Biden to disclose classified information, to retain classified information, which he definitely knew was against the law. When you get named special counsel, what's that guy do? He destroys the evidence. That's the key takeaway in my mind. That's the key takeaway.
This is what you're fighting for. I mean, every day you're out there.
What they're doing is blowing people off.
If you continue to look the other way and shut up, then the oppressors, the authoritarians, get total control and total power. Because this is just like in Arizona, this is just like in Georgia. It's another element that backs them into a corner and shows their lies and misrepresentations.
This is why this audience is going to have to get engaged. As we've told you, this is the fight.
All this nonsense, all this spin, they can't handle the truth.
War Room, Battleground. Here's your host, Stephen K. Bannon.
Okay, Tuesday, 12 March, Year of Our Lord, 2024. Just a couple of the highlights, of course, in the previous hour. Our 5 o'clock hour went through it in more depth, but I want to put out there that you're seeing the crumbling of the lawfare case, the angle of attack. That's where they're going now, to the dictatorship. That's why Raskin and Elias have come up with this idea, since lawfare is crumbling, that they're going to fight for the House, to take the majority in the House, even if it's by one seat, two seats, because they've already told us they're not going to certify Trump's election. On January 6th of 2025, they're not going to certify it. That's them. 57% of Democrats who will vote, likely voters, 57% according to Rasmussen, have said, we support that. So lace them up tight and lace them up high, ladies and gentlemen. This is going to be a fight every day. What is 2:37 in a wake up? I think it's 2:37 in a wake up. It's going to get intense and hard, and we're going to be more relentless. Remember, it's going to be last man or woman standing on this one. You see today, explosive testimony, great questioning. Started off a little slow, but got into it. Of course, the great Matt Gaetz there, obviously, and Jim Jordan. More about that also tomorrow. And I want to thank everybody that helped put the 5 o'clock hour together so we could drill down even more on this. I want to shift it up a little bit for a second. Kerry Sheffield joins us. Now, the audience, you know Kerry as one of the fighters, always the tip of the spear, has been out there on these issues, particularly men and women's sports, other issues about women, but she's a fighter across the board. I've known her for a long time. and Kerry, maybe we get into this talk about mental health and your about Biden's State of the Union and the mental health issues out there. And then I want to get into this new, I guess, autobiography or memoir of yours, Motorhome Prophecies, which I've known you for a long time, but I didn't know any of this, to say the least. To say I was shocked is an understatement. Talk to me about mental health, because earlier today in the morning show, I talked about, you know, Ralph Reed has got this huge effort, $62 million, to go out and get low engagement, you know, low voter participation, low information, evangelicals and traditional Catholics. He thinks there's another net 8 million votes out there for President Trump, but also the turnout, the tens of millions that are registered and vote on occasions, because this is going to be a base plus election. On the other hand, we talked about how the Democrats are looking to win, if they can't beat Trump head on, to win the House and then to not certify the election, which they're bragging about. This is Jamie Raskin and others, the Mark Eliases of the world. And we noted that this whole fight over TikTok, which they had the classified, as we talked about earlier in the early hour, they had the classified hearing today. This is TikTok combined with Taylor Swift. Taylor Swift is quite obvious. Her concerts stop August 20th. They don't pick back up until mid-November. It's the biggest gap she's going to have in what has been the biggest, most successful music tour in music history. And, you know, her low engagement, low propensity, low information of voters combined with TikTok could be a deciding factor here. You know, she said she wasn't going to get involved in politics. She was involved in 22, actually came out, made some endorsements, said she wasn't going to get involved here recently. And she was and she called out, I guess in 20, she made endorsements in 22 at the last second. She came out, and on Super Tuesday, she came out and said, 22, she was gave endorsement. And then at the Super Tuesday, she came at the last second and said, everybody go vote, go get engaged, et cetera. So a big issue for them is obviously mental health. Talk to me about what is your criticism about Biden? I think they've made it a pretty big priority. At least I see it as a big priority. I think some of it is overblown. You clearly don't. So walk me through your theory of the case here before we get into your memoir.
I'm so sorry. I'm muted. Steve, thanks for having me. I just want to acknowledge that you said you were shocked. So I'm shocked that I could shock Steve Bannon. No.
Hold it. Hang on. When we get into the personal part, the audience will be shocked. So I know it's hard to shock me. I was gobsmacked. I wasn't shocked. I was gobsmacked. I was beyond shocked. But we'll get to that in a second. Tell me what sure. Do you know? I think they've made it a priority of mental health. And I think a lot of the mental health is, quite frankly, overblown. I think we've treated some of these kids too softly. They're too protected. They can't face the real world. But you've got a different theory of the case here.
Well, I do agree with you that it is overblown. But I also know, having experienced mental illness in my family, which I know we'll get to, that it becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy, if you will. The more anxiety you feel, the more mentally ill you feel, the more it snowballs. And so you are, the things you're talking about, it's, you know, psyops, basically, psychological operations designed to invoke anxiety designed to, within social media and the algorithms for young women, for example, to create. I mean, the Wall Street Journal reported how Instagram executives knew that Instagram was causing mental illness among young girls by feeding them content that encouraged eating disorders, body insecurity. And then online, there's a huge problem with bullying among young people and teenagers, both young boys and young girls. So there is a lot of stirring the pot to create this horrible situation where people's mental health is under assault. I personally believe it's a form of spiritual warfare. And that's where I think you and I would be in alignment, in the sense of this is something much deeper than just a partisan fight, that it is really a cultural fight. And so I think that the idea that there is a mental health crisis is true, in the sense that you look at, for example, the suicide rate of Gen Z women. So the young women today, college age, it's almost double the suicide rate of Gen X women when they were college age. So something's going on that young women, and then also in 2022, which is the most recent data we have from CDC, take it however you will, they found that women ages 25 to 34, that's one of the fastest growing demographics of suicide as well. So that's prime childbearing years. And then the depression rate is the highest it's been since 1941. So I think the mental health crisis is real. However, I do think that in many respects, it's actually self-created, and it's self-sabotaging by a lot of these really toxic, not only online, but also just the overall rejection of God. And that's something I get into in the book quite a bit, about the scientific evidence that belief in God, religious participation, faith community is strongly associated with suicide prevention, less opioid deaths, less alcohol addiction deaths. There's so much scientific evidence for that. And yet, this was the kicker. The most atheist profession, according to Harvard, among, they've surveyed all their professors, the two most atheist professorships are biologists and psychologists. So it's this toxic combination of the psychiatric and psychological industry is deeply hostile to God, which is literally a life-saving force.
You think that the techno-feudalism, which is this new term, the techno-feudalism is driving this, because this is one of the fights over TikTok also. I mean, it's an information warfare weapon, but there's all types of analysis and data, just like you said, the others, to show that particularly young women, but also young men too, but particularly young women are susceptible to all these images and this lifestyle they put out there. They get depressed, particularly if their parents are not religious or there's not a religious experience in their home. But what is going to stop this? How do we actually thwart this, besides the spiritual warfare of making sure that we're nurturing the families, and the families are the unit that we focus on? And we're going to have Kelly Walker join us here in a second and talk about that. How do we combat this? How do we use policy to actually show these kids that we're standing up for them, instead of just, you know, patting them on the head, this is terrible, and let's put more money into mental health? How do we actually stop them from being abused like this? Because to me, this is child abuse.
Yeah, it is. And I know there's been some effort in Texas and Utah and some other states at a policy level to put heavy restrictions on social media use among minors, because the First Amendment freedom of speech, I support that. But for children, the rules are different. For minors, the rules are different. Everything's different when you're a minor versus you're an adult. So I think the toxicity of the products being used on young children's brains is a big problem. And I think that's something that can be changed at a policy level and addressed at a policy level. I think also, and I'm glad your next guest is going to be talking about how to push back at a policy level in the schools, because the school counselors, the school psychologists, they're muck deep in this, in terms of embracing, rejecting God, rejecting faith community, rejecting purpose and meaning and traditional values, traditional families. So having counselors, and I know in Texas there's a fight on the ground there where they were trying to allow chaplains to be in schools, or I think they went a little too far, where I think they were trying to replace them altogether. But I think having clergy in schools to allow spiritual counseling to children, I think that's great. And so I think there are things you can do also in terms of I mean, my book, I don't know if you want to get into that now or how much time we have, but I've got a copy here and today is actually the launch day. So here's the cover, Motor Home Prophecies. And there it is right there. Thank you. The backstory on this with my memoir and the reason I'm so passionate about all these issues of mental health is because, unfortunately, in my family, we've struggled with mental health for decades now. My father was raped by a...
Hold on a second, because I want to tee this up. Because people know Carrie Sheffield that comes on the show and out in professional life like you've just presented. Hard, tough, boom, these are the facts, here's how it is, I'm a fighter, I'm not going to back down. The story you're about to tell, I don't understand why you're not an axe murderer, because it's one of the most horrific stories I've ever heard. So, I mean, I'm serious. When I heard that, I said, it can't be the Carrie Sheffield that I know and comes on the show. She's the nicest, calmest, tough fighter, you know, very classy, always, you know, appropriate. Walk through the story of that you tell in the book that is, besides all the great things you do on mental health and the stats you put out and coming back to religion, this is worth the purchase of the book itself. Walk through your life story.
Oh, thanks, Steve. I like to say all those things you talk about in my political career, that's the resume stuff. You know, similar to yours, I worked at Goldman Sachs. You did too. I went to Harvard. You did too. I got my master's in the Kennedy School. You were at the business school. Those are all the resume things. I also worked at Moody's Investor Service. I was a former bond analyst and then doing my political debating, going on talk shows. I used to host a show here on Real America's Voice. I know I get fan notes even a few years out since leaving. But that's all the resume stuff. And this book, I like to call it my anti-resume stuff or the shadow resume. It's all that stuff that I've been hiding because I just didn't know how to talk about it. There was so much shame around the way that I was raised with my family. And so I finally just reached a point where, you know what, I need to be clean with myself to understand this trauma that it's intergenerational trauma. And, you know, the Bible talks about the sins being passed down from generation to generation. That's really what this book is about intergenerational trauma. And the title is Motorhome Prophecies because I have seven biological siblings. And so the eight kids and my two parents, all 10 of us spent a lot of my childhood and just our childhoods living in a motorhome. So 10 people living in a motorhome. My mother gave birth to my brother when the family didn't even have a motorhome. The family was living in a tent. So I've lived in tents. I've lived in sheds. When I took my ACT exam, we were living in a shed in the Ozarks with no running water. We had to have it pumped in with a green pipe. And the experience, we also had houses too. That was the crazy part. It's like we would careen between normal existence, public schools, and then back to the motorhome homeschool. So I ended up going to 17 public schools and a homeschool and all over the country, just very transient. And the reason why is because my father's mentally ill. It was a combination of extreme musical gifting. So I don't know if any of your viewers are familiar with Andres Segovia. He was one of the world's greatest classical guitarists. He was knighted by the King of Spain. He has an asteroid named after him. He had 10 honorary doctorates, a Lifetime Grammy Achievement Award. He hand selected my father to be one of his musical proteges. And so then you also had, my father had childhood sexual assault. He was raped by a Mormon babysitter. So my ancestors helped found the Mormon church. And then you have his interpretation of Mormon theology. I make a clear distinction between the things my dad did and the official LDS church. Even though theologically I'm not aligned with the LDS church anymore, I don't believe it's a cult, but I do believe what my father did was a cult. So basically my father said, and he was excommunicated from the LDS church. He said, I'm a prophet. I will become president someday. And in order to fulfill this prophetic call, I'm going to play my amazing world-class level guitar music on street corners and pass out brochures and try to convert them to be Mormon. And then as we grew older, he assigned each of my, you know, all eight of us, all seven siblings and myself, instruments. So I grew up playing the violin and the oboe, playing classical music on street corners, trying to convert people to be Mormon, and patriotic quotes as well in this brochure. So it was pretty wild. It was very gypsy. And for a long time, I was hostile to God because our dad was physically, emotionally, just spiritually abusive. He would say we were evil. At one point, we had to eat grass because we didn't even have food from the city park. We boiled it in this little broth with these little cubes, bouillon cubes. We were on welfare. We were on church welfare from the LDS church. And it was just so much instability. And he said it was all God's will. Well, it was so much stress and trauma that eventually two of my brothers developed schizophrenia. And the older of the two groped me and tried to rape me. And it was traumatizing. I was 17. And so by the time I was 18, I said to my dad, you know, I want to go away to college. I don't feel safe here. I don't think you're a prophet. My loyalty is to the LDS prophet, not you. You're a rogue prophet, basically, is what I said. And he raised his hand in the square and he said, I prophesy in the name of Jesus, you'll be raped and murdered if you leave. And to have your own father speak that over you was very damaging for me spiritually and emotionally, because eventually it created this really anger toward God. And I think what's happened in my life is I see it happening at a macro level with a lot of young people, where there is abuse happening in religious settings, from pedophilia in the Catholic Church to, you know, embezzling money and, you know, women being sexually abused in other denominations. So it's there. And so people see that and they're repulsed. And so they walk away. But I make the case over and over in the book that that's actually not God. It's like saying if you hear a really bad symphony being played, Beethoven's Fifth, you don't blame Beethoven, you blame the musicians for how they are interpreting and displaying this genius of Beethoven. So anyway, the book, I get into, like I said, how eventually I was able to forgive him. And but it was largely through my conversion after 12 years as an agnostic, to the Christian faith. And through that walk, I was able to forgive him, release that anger. But it was very difficult.
I tell you what, Carrie, hang on for one second. We're going to take a short commercial break. We're going to return with Carrie Sheffield. Absolutely stunning personal story. Motorhome Prophecies is the title of the book. It comes out today. We're going to take a short commercial break. We got Kelly Walker. We got Carrie Sheffield. Ben Harnwell, also from Rome. Short commercial break. Back in a moment.
As we head toward a presidential election in November, one thing you can be sure of, 2024 will be a tumultuous year like no other. How will your hard-earned savings fare during this year? You're already seeing the impacts of inflation at the pump, the grocery store. The dollar continues to lose buying power quicker than your wages can increase. How are you protecting your savings? Consider diversifying with gold from Birch Gold Group. For decades, gold has been the choice of investors and central banks to hedge against inflation. Now you can own it in a tax-sheltered IRA with the help of Birch Gold. Just text Bannon, B-A-N-N-O-N, to 989898, and Birch Gold will send you a free info kit on gold. They'll help you convert an existing IRA or 401k into an IRA in gold. And the best part, you don't have to pay a penny out of pocket. With an A-plus rating, with the Better Business Bureau, thousands of satisfied customers, you can trust Birch Gold. Text Bannon to 989898 to claim your free info kit. That's Bannon to 989898. And secure your savings now. Take action. Text Bannon at 989898. Action, action, action. The apples in your holiday pie taste amazing, but it's not exactly the recommended 5 servings of fruits and vegetables. The Mayo Clinic says if you want to help prevent heart disease, lower blood pressure, and your cholesterol, eat 5 servings of fruits and vegetables every day, which, as you know, is almost impossible. That's why you need to check out Field of Greens. Every fruit and vegetable in Field of Greens was medically selected by doctors to support your vital organs, like your heart, your lungs, your kidneys, and your immune system. Yo, folks, the holidays are here, and you need to stay healthy. Plus, you'll notice your skin, hair, and nails will look healthier. Field of Greens is the simplest way to get those daily fruits and veggies, and it tastes amazing. Let me get you started with 15% off your first order. Visit fieldofgreens.com. Use promo code Bannon. That's Promo code Bannon at fieldofgreens.com. Fieldofgreens.com. Make sure you take it today. Use your agency. Action, action, action. Fieldofgreens.com. Promo code Bannon. True or false? Using your tax refund to pay off credit card debt is a smart thing. Actually, that's false. DoneWithDebt.com published a brilliant strategy designed to let you keep your hard-earned tax refund and reduce or eliminate credit card debt. Most Americans owe thousands in credit card debt. In fact, Daily Mail's got a story that 56 million Americans carry credit card debt, and that debt will take years to pay off, if you pay it off at all. Done with Debt found that filing bankruptcy is usually not the answer, and taking out loans to pay off credit cards usually increases the debt. When you engage Done with Debt, their legal experts and skilled negotiators take on the credit card companies for you. Their winning strategies are designed with one goal: solve your debt situation quickly and permanently. First things first, chat with a Done with Debt strategist and explore your solutions. Some debt fighting strategies are time sensitive, so you'll need to move quickly. For a free consultation, visit donewithdebt.com. That's donewithdebt.com. Do it today. Take action.
All this nonsense, all this spin, they can't handle the truth.
War Room Battleground with Stephen K. Bannon.
You saw today's been pretty contentious. We're going to get back to Kerry Sheffield in a second. Been pretty contentious on Capitol Hill, of course, with the budgeting. These massive deficits are even baked into the proposed budgets. Of course, this amazing testimony that I think pretty evident that Biden should be indicted for numerous crimes, or president should be dropping President Trump. I mean, Biden did it, to me, seems 10 times worse. Turbulence is going to be every day between now and Election Day and then thereafter. I mean, I'd like to pat you on the head, tell you it's not going to be, but I don't think that's reality. That's where we recommend you go to birchgold.com right now /Bannon. Talk to Philip Patrick and the team. They're the best to talk to you about why gold has been a hedge for, I don't know, 6,000, 7,000, 8,000 years of man's recorded history. So make sure you go to birchgold.com/Bannon. Talk to Philip Patrick and the team about what they have to offer at Birch Gold and why gold has been a hedge against times of turbulence throughout man's history. It's time that you talk to the professionals. We lay out the macro and the capital markets. Talk to the pros. Kerry, how did you – I know how hard it is to get into Harvard. It's actually gotten harder since I got out. How did you go to 17 public schools and get into Harvard?
Well, it was a lot. As I said, my father disowned me when I said I want to go away to college. I'm fifth in the birth order, but the first girl and first to leave. And I basically had no safety net. I had to work my way. I worked as a janitor. I worked at Taco Bell, and I got 5 internships by the time I graduated my undergrad. And I had nowhere to go during summer breaks or Christmas breaks. And so I threw myself into my work. And so that's really how I did it, was through working really hard and honestly trying to prove my dad wrong. He said, "I prophesy in the name of Jesus, you'll be raped and murdered if you leave my cult." And I said, "You know what? Screw that. I'm going to work really hard, and I'm going to intern for Newsweek magazine. I'm going to intern for Robert Novak. I'm going to do all these things with my journalism career." And I went too far in the sense that I was so angry at him that I let my anger fuel me for negativity, and I repressed a lot. But it did also give me that motivation, that drive to get into Harvard.
Kerry, where can people go to get all your writings, social media, and where do they particularly go to get this book? Because I know every page will rock you as you read it. Where do they go?
Thanks, Steve. Sure. I'm kerrysheffield.com. Again, the title here is Motorhome Prophecies, A Journey of Healing and Forgiveness. You can get it wherever you buy your books. I love my local independent bookstores, so do that. It's also on all the big sellers, Barnes & Noble and Books A Million and Amazon and wherever the big ones are as well.
Kerry, thank you so much. Shocking book, but well worth the read. Thank you so much, and thank you for fighting for the American family.
Thank you, Steve.
Kerry Sheffield, a fighter. Another fighter, Kelly Walker. Kelly, so you're fighting on this in a different way. You're also worried about the family, the schools, our children, all of it. Tell us about what this fight and this coalition you put together.
Absolutely, Steve. As you know, there's been a war on parents, and we've seen a lot of that in the school boards. What we haven't seen a lot of is what's happened from Washington, D.C. on down and what the National School Board Association did. So I've put together a coalition of parenting group leaders, some parents, constitutional attorneys, public figures, and it's based on what the government's done to parents. We've had parents like Jennifer Mahuta in Sahuarita, Arizona, who was put into prison for 5 days to quote-unquote teach her a lesson. They handcuffed her, her husband, and their 16-year-old daughter, shoved them into police cars. And what was her crime? Her crime was she wanted documentation as to why her healthy child was quarantined. I discovered that this National School Board Association memo, which was written on September 29th, 2021, precipitated the October 4th Merrick Garland memo designating parents as domestic terrorists. I found FOIA'd emails that showed that within the NSBA, they said this was inappropriate, that communication issues plague the NSBA, and they had to backpedal on that. However, parents like me, I was sentenced to 100 days in jail. Pima County stole $10,000 out of our Tucson home sale. And I discovered in writing an article for George Magazine that I was, in fact, the first parent targeted, the only one specifically mentioned. And I thought my experience was somewhat unique until I started to see what was happening across the country. And I started to have parents tell me their stories. And in spite of the fact that Merrick Garland and the NSBA had to backtrack and said that this letter, 14 attorneys general sent a letter after the Merrick Garland memo calling this NSBA memo a massive fraud against the American people. And while they backtracked on it, there are people who've gone to prison, they've been fined, they've been harassed, and this continues, and it's all based on a fraudulent supposition, a fraudulent premise.
Are you comfortable, given your experience at kind of the deck plate levels at the school boards and what you've seen of other people, and in particular, I know your experience is a little bit Arizona-centric, are you comfortable that at the federal level, particularly with this budget, that there was a hard enough fight to take out? You know, Russ Vogt always talks about trying to get the woke and weaponized out of this. Are you comfortable that either DOJ, and that's all coming up on the 22nd. The reason I'm teeing this up is that there's still a chance to get another bite of the apple. But are you comfortable either at the FBI or the DOJ or even at the Department of Education that the House members that are Republicans have heard the kind of cry for help of your coalition and others around the country and take this seriously, that this at one level has to be confronted at the federal level, particularly what's been going on with law enforcement working hand in glove on some of this stuff?
I am. Lawfare has been waged against parents. I'm one of the top because I was the first parent who was exposed to it. But I sent an email out around July, early July, to several members of Congress, and I got a response immediately from several of them, including Jim Jordan's office. They put together teams of their staff to look into this. And since July, I've been giving them information, testimonials of other parents, details of my situation. So they're already working on it. They're already investigating it. And that's precipitated this meeting, which I'm very, very much looking forward to. And Paul Gosar's chief of staff already said, we're going to put this forward for a committee meeting. And I spoke to Paul Gosar at an event that you and I both, Steve, were at in New Jersey last year. And Paul Gosar expressed deep concern over this. He said he wants to hunt down and find the people who've done this to parents. So this is something that's unfinished business. I know that it's of deep concern to Paul Gosar, Andy Ogles of Tennessee, Eli Crane, Andy Biggs, and Jim Jordan, among others. And I understand there are other members of Congress coming on board with this with deep concern about what's been done to parents and families. I mean, this has been a nightmare for my family, and they've tried to silence me. They've stolen money that we needed against the Arizona Homesteading Act. They had no right to take that money. Taking that money prevented me from being able to appeal because we have finite resources. But the more they've done to stop me, the more I've pressed in on this, I've been working on this for years, and we've got Mom Army, Dad Army, America's Mom, Moms for Liberty. It gave us a quote from my George Magazine article. We've got law enforcement officers who are honest, who've seen what's happened, one in particular in Pima, Arizona. He was asked by John Carruth, the superintendent of Vail Schools, to profile me and watch me before I ever stepped foot in the first school board meeting I went to. And his office's responses were not the Soviet Union. So this is not only, this is grassroots. This is parents like Jennifer Mahuda who've been traumatized by this, really didn't want to come forward, but we've provided a means. Zeke Smith from Mom Army and Dad Army put together a form, online form, where you can submit your complaints. So not only are they concerned about it, they've been doing something about it. I've talked with Eli Crane a great deal about this. He knows my story of being arrested twice for speaking out, for trying to protect my family and our community.
Do you think that because obviously people like you, they're using that as an example to put fear into everybody else, right? They want to put fear in them that, hey, if you step up and try to do it, you end up like Kelly Walker. In your situation with the school, has the situation changed at all? In other words, all the suffering you guys are going through, the economic deprivation, all that. I understand you're working with Congress at one level, but do you think it's actually changed at the local level? Has your fight resulted in any change that you're comfortable with or happy with?
Well, one of the main things is awareness and people getting alongside, coming alongside this. You know, I've even talked to Sam Sorbo, Kevin Sorbo, others. I've gone to a lot of meetings on my own dime, flown around the country to raise awareness for this. And that awareness is happening. And first and foremost, we need to expose these people and what they did. We need to reveal the FOIA emails that are out there saying exactly what happened, that this was a huge mistake. It was a fraud against the American people. Jim Jordan said in an interim report from the Subcommittee on the Weaponization of the U.S. Government, he said that the letter and subsequent memo had a, quote, chilling effect on free speech. And what that means is that it caused people to be afraid. So, yes, people have seen what they've done to me. It's caused them to be afraid, but they've also looked at me, and this group is using my situation as sort of a case study. They've looked at me as a champion for what they're going through, because some of them have felt like, hey, whatever we do, nobody cares, nobody's going to do anything about this. Like a mother and a children's book author being put in county prison for 5 days. I mean, she went in courageously, but she came out traumatized. So, yes, my family's been through a great deal. Harassment, lawfare, doxing, threats to our lives, threats to kill my children, to rape my wife. And I'm telling you, it's very difficult, but I am committed to seeing this through because I'm not the only parent. And this is still going on under this presumption, which has been proven false, that somehow parents, concerned parents, are domestic terrorists. It's a huge attack on parents and families. And these people from Washington, D.C. down to the local level need to be held to account. These parents need an apology. They need restitution of what they lost. The whole premise of this is false. So any court cases, any convictions need to be overturned because it was based on that chilling effect on free speech.
When you say there's been threats, you've been doxed, threats against your children, threats to rape your wife, have you turned those over to law enforcement and have they taken any action? And if not, why not?
I did, and the FBI's been watching me since 2020. I had them in my coffee shop that we used to have in Tucson. They completely ignored it, and yet the FBI's been watching me for 4 years like I'm some terrorist. I mean, I have black and white threats to my life. I have letters that came in the mail saying, I'm going to tie you up and rape your wife and murder your kids while you watch. FBI did nothing, and I got convicted for sitting in a chair and speaking, and in the trial, my lawyer asked, did Mr. Walker take a threatening step toward you? No. Did he raise his voice? No. And then the prosecutor gets up and says, well, do you feel like Mr. Walker could have done that? What kind of injustice is that? Like, parents are being threatened to be killed, doxxed, hate thrown at them, businesses ruined, lives destroyed, children. You know, this graphic shows you that some of the letters that were received by me and other parents, and my picture was posted around Tucson, if not further, calling me a Nazi pig and a white supremacist. You see toward the top there that Teresa Cullen and the County Health Department and the sheriff's officer who did the first false arrest on me for coming to the county board of supervisors, they've been watching us. One day we had a van with a bunch of antennas outside our coffee shop. I mean, it's been absolutely ludicrous. And what have I blown the whistle on? I've blown the whistle on these COVID policies that caused to a demonstrable increase in youth suicide. I mean, we had people coming to our coffee shop saying, you got to speak out for us because our kids are committing suicide. They're creating a two-class society. They're forcing masks on kids. They're isolating them, keeping them out of school. And look, among many things, I'm a scientist. I was working for a national healthcare publication when the lockdown started. And I said what was true from the beginning. A virus largely doesn't affect kids. It doesn't cause mortality except kids who are already very, very sick. And I went to John Carruth and the Vail School District and I said, hey, these parents, you need to talk to them. You need to hear their stories. I had a young man send me over Instagram a letter that he was prepared for this April 27, 2021 school board meeting, which, by the way, you covered back at that time. And he wanted to explain to the school board how his friend had committed suicide in the very gym where they were holding the school board meetings. He jumped off the bleachers onto his head. A young man committed suicide, shot himself in the head outside our house in our neighborhood. He was a Trump supporter, and we found that kids were targeted politically. I mean, all of this was there. I presented it. You can look up the stats. And instead of addressing it and sitting down with these parents, they demonized all these parents. And what John Carruth did was go to the National School Board Association, portray these parents as hostile. Over 200 parents showed up at that April 27th board meeting, which by the way, started in our coffee shop the day before. A group of parents got together and said, we need to take this to the school board. Instead of being listened to, they were demonized. And this went all the way up to Washington, D.C. It's amazing that in my research, I've discovered where this all started, and we need to go back to that. We need to go back to the premise which caused so much suffering and persecution of parents and families and led to suicides. I had people coming in our coffee shop. We did Freedom Talk events. I created a platform, realfreedomtalk.com, and put the camera on people. We had a teenage boy who was put on suicide watch because of his treatment as an outcast. And he told his principal, hey, there's no mask mandate. I don't have to wear a mask. What you're doing is illegal. The principal said, I don't care, so sue me. I mean, the treatment of these people was subhuman.
Kelly, where did they go to get all the story? Give me the site where people should go to get all the information on you and this coalition that you've put together.
Well, most of it you can find at realfreedomtalk.com. I put some of it out on Twitter and Instagram and Truth, and that handles at Real Freedom Talk. So realfreedomtalk.com has a number of articles that I've written, shows where I've interviewed people. We're still putting it together. We're still working on this coalition. We're excited to go to Washington, D.C. and speak with a number of congressional teams to bring forward testimonials, to bring forward the facts. And like I said, we're using my situation as sort of the bellwether or the canary in the mine shaft or the case study to show what has happened to parents. And believe me, it's devastating, but you just keep moving forward and hoping for justice.
No, it's incredible. This is why they're targeting the family. This is the neo-Marxist element of it. Kelly, one more time, social media, where do people go?
They can go to realfreedomtalk.com. We have a givesendgo.com/freedomtalk if you'd like to donate. And then on social media, my handle is @realfreedomtalk.
Kelly, thank you for joining us. We're going to cover this one closely. So thank you for being on here today to kick it off.
Steve, thanks for being a fighter and allowing me to come on today because I'm a fighter too, and we got to take back our country.
Thanks, brother. Right there, you see it. I mean, this is also why I think people are so upset about why in this budget process you do have leverage points. You do have power. Why have we gone through this entire budget process? And hey, why is the FBI funded? You gotta use your leverage. You gotta punch hard here. The whole weaponization. And look, Jordan, these guys did a good job today. But I said he should assign the weaponization committee to somebody else. It's such a huge topic. We haven't gotten there. We got to be honest. And look what's happened to Kelly Walker. And that's just one example throughout the country. They have focused like all communist revolutions, and Posobiec knows this. He did that great, what, 8-part series. All communist revolutions start with coming after the family, and particularly coming after the children, to turn the children against the parents. It's their oldest playbook, and they're going to run it and run, and they're running it in this country. And if you think we're out of the woods yet, you're sadly mistaken. We are not by a long shot. There's so many stories like this happening throughout the country. And we've had a huge surge and took over a bunch of school boards, but they push back and they push back hard. So I think this fight right now is a standoff. Kelly said something. You saw this in Carrie Sheffield and Kelly Walker about fear. Earlier today on the show, I had the Done With Debt guys. I want to also talk to you about taxes. One of the people have a fear right now about they're so far behind their credit cards. They just put it in the drawer and they hope it goes away. You can't do that. That's where you go with the done with debt team, donewithdebt.com. There is a process. The same thing with taxes. If you're behind your taxes, you didn't file correctly, you're getting letters from the IRS, go to the Tax Network guys, Tax Network USA. That's TNUSA.com. Promo code Bannon, you'll get a discount. Okay. Now, it's also a process. The IRS, you've seen in these tax proposals coming up, there's 300 or 400 million that's definitely going to more IRS agents. They're not going to go after the wealthy. The wealthy have the best lawyers, these tax accountants. I mean, it's a whole industry about how they have either tax delay or tax avoidance. And I'm not saying they're breaking the law. They know the law and they have experts. You don't. But don't fear this. It's a process. Just like the credit card companies, the IRS is a process. To get into the process and make sure you're properly represented, that's what Tax Network USA is about. So go to TNUSA.com, promo code Bannon. Also, the Jim Rickards, I got tremendous feedback on the Jim Rickards interview. That's RickardsWarRoom.com, all one word, RickardsWarRoom.com. Go check that out. If you love strategic intelligence, if you like what Jim presents on capital markets, on geopolitics and national security, look, it's one of the strengths of the show. We're making available to a working class and middle class audience kind of things that would never be talked about or just not discussed because people say it's too boring. The audience doesn't find it boring. And you want to immerse yourself in more information. That's why Rickards is now kind of a regular contributor here. But if you like strategic intelligence, it's from Paradigm Press. Go check it out. RickardsWarRoom.com. One of the best. I'm really honored to kind of be the forerunner of his show. Lou Dobbs is next on Lindell TV. Of course, tomorrow morning back on Real America's Voice, we'll be back with the Mothership, the morning show at 10 a.m. It's going to be pretty explosive. Alex Jones is going to join us. We're scheduled to have Alex Jones at the 11 o'clock hour. I'm really, really excited about that. Okay. Lou Dobbs is next. We're going to be back here at 10 o'clock tomorrow morning. We'll see you then when you're in the war room.
Tax Network USA is pure war room for solving your IRS tax problems. If you owe back taxes, COVID was your lucky break. Tax court shut down, the IRS paused, and you skated. Well, baby, that party is over. The IRS is adding 20,000 enforcement agents, basically tax cops. Honest, hardworking Americans like you are in the crosshairs. Rich people have tax lawyers, and you don't. You'll pay up, plus interest and penalties. Tax USA Network has brilliant war room type strategies designed to solve your IRS problem quickly in your favor. Never call the IRS yourself. You're at their mercy. You could sit on hold for 6 to 8 hours and get hung up on. Grind you for all your back taxes plus interest and penalties. Tax Network USA attorneys have a preferred direct line to the IRS. They know which agents to talk to and who to avoid. If they get difficult agent, hey, they just call a different agent. Tax Network USA learned of a limited time special IRS offer. The IRS is willing to waive $1 billion in penalties if you qualify. Find out if you qualify before it's too late. Schedule your free confidential consultation with Tax Network USA. They've resolved over $1 billion in tax debts. Think about that. They've resolved over $1 billion in tax debts. They offer a best-in-class client satisfaction guarantee. Now call 1-800-245-6000. That's 1-800-245-6000. And visit Tax Network USA. That's TNUSA.com/Bannon. TNUSA.com/Bannon. Make sure you take action on this today. this IRS grind is only going to get much worse.
.com, all one word, warroomhealth.com. Use the code WARROOM at checkout to save 67% of your first shipment. That's code WARROOM at checkout to save 67%. And do it again. War Room Health, all one word, warroomhealth.com. Go there today. You need, if you're going to be part of the posse, you need a strong heart. You need a lion's heart. How we're going to do that is with Salty. Go there. Do it today. Check it out.